bomb a 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 dang a dang dang a ding a dong.
Blue moon, blue moon, you saw me standing alone.
Hello and welcome back to the Railway Men podcast. We have no crew game to talk about this weekend, so we thought, what better than talking to another ex-Crew Alex player? To do that, I am joined by Tim Robinson and producer Dave. Hello, guys.
Hi, Stu.
And with us today is a man who joined Crew in 2003 and only actually retired officially from playing football this season, I believe. So an incredibly long time in professional football. By my count, it's one season in the Premier League, two in League One, two in League Two, and an unbelievable 13 seasons in the Championship. It's Luke Varney. Hello, Luke.
How are you doing? You okay, fellas?
Yeah, all good. Thank you for coming on today.
Thank you for the invite.
So we'll start, Luke, as I tend to always start these, at the beginning. You came to Crew's fans' attention in 2003 when you signed from a club who I would say I'm not the only one in saying I'd never heard of before. But can you take us a bit further back than that? How did you get into football? How did you end up signing for Quorn?
Basically, probably nine was when I started to show an interest. I was at a team called Beaumont Town, quite a competitive age at really football, and we had a really good team, and it really got me feeling like it's something I'd like to do. Never really thought I'd progress to any sort of level, but from there, progressed through the years. Leicester eventually picked me up, probably about 11, 12. So I had a good couple of years there. Great sort of learning curve. Unfortunately, that usual excuse about me being too small, and got released at 14. Which obviously broke my heart at the time, going from telling people you're playing against Forest and Derby, and then I had to eventually go to sort of a non-league team called Birstall. So it was just a complete change of cultures, as you can imagine, the professionalism I was used to and going to that. And at such an early age, feeling like your dreams were gone and shattered, it was quite frustrating, and found it quite hard for the reason, really, because obviously that's the reason still being used now, and it drives me nuts. Which will probably come on to is why I've set up my own PT business to share my thoughts about being an athlete more so than the football skills. It's so more important now to be the shape, because you can obviously learn the football skills. So, but yeah, from there, went to Birstall, and my wife was actually going to school in Quorn, and she said that the team's really good. They've got great facilities. So I wasn't driving at the time, spoke to the chairman, and fair play. He come and pick me up for a training session and didn't look back, really. Absolutely loved it. Great facilities, great bunch of lads. And we were in a great league, actually, a floodlit league, which West Brom were in, teams like that I was used to playing for Leicester. So it just felt brilliant. And I started to excel through the ranks there.
That was going to be my next question then, because obviously you must have been, you know, the star player, because eventually after, is it 3 years you're at Quorn, and then Neil Baker sort of comes on the horizon. Is that how it happened? Were you scoring lots of goals and then you hear all of a sudden Crew have got an interest in you?
Yeah, I think initially I played that 1 year in the under-18s, which was obviously playing against similar lads, obviously my age. And then I got took into the reserves, and stepping up into men's football, the first time I'd done it, and I was quite quick, quite nimble. So I was getting booted quite a lot, but it made me grow up quite quickly. It made me a bit more aware of my surroundings, a bit more streetwise, shall we say. And I wasn't in the reserves long, went into the first team. And I remember looking at those first team plays, and I was thinking I'd absolutely love to be like you. I looked up to them at that time, thinking I'd love to play in this league. They were in a decent league at the time, Midland Alliance, I think it was. So they were sort of the players I were looking up to. So, yeah, I had a good decent first season. But then the second season, I think I had about 17 up until Christmas. I scored 5 in one game, I think, that Bakes heard about. And actually, the game that he come to watch, I think he was watching his son, so it was completely by chance, and it was against Biddulph. Obviously it's in the Stoke area, and look, we'd have it. I obviously had a decent game, and then we had the phone call on the Monday. So,
and you're working at this point as well as playing football, aren't you? Yeah. Now, I've just said, is it 18 seasons you ended up playing professionally?
Yeah, I think I can't really count this one. It's a bit of a mess, really. But no, I try. I gave sort of everything. I've spoke. People have asked me now to sort of reflect, and if I'm being honest, I didn't have a lot of ability, but I worked so hard and I feel like I grafted for those 18 years and got everything I could out of it. I've got no regrets at all. So
that's where I was sort of going. The fact, you know, you're playing football because you, you know, you're an all right standard at Quorn, you know, it's fair to say it's higher than I ever got by quite a long way. But you're also working in a factory, I believe. So is that the work ethic that you then took into the professional game, that when you got to the professional game?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's speaking to players that obviously got took on at Leicester at that time and I got released. Now, none of them play football. So I tend to think that if I'd have stayed in there, I might have just, being a professional footballer at 16, 17, 18, they think they've got the world at their feet. They've got everything. I had a bit of a culture shock being bought out of it, having to work hard for not a lot of money. I think I was on about £130 a week, chucking fabric rolls about. And it upset me because it was, I wanted to play football. So I remember actually running to work, running back. That was my session if I wasn't training in the evening. So always in the back of my mind, I was hoping that I could make it work. So it all fell together eventually.
And then you just said that Neil Baker comes, it's possibly, you know, a coincidence. He's there to see his son. You get a phone call Monday. Is that when you meet Dario? Is that the first interaction you've had with him?
Yeah, well, I speak to the chairman now at Quorn quite a lot. And apparently the first phone call was Dario had asked if I could go on trial. And the chairman at Quorn said, no, it'd be a straight no. You've seen him in his environment. Come and watch him play in another game, which probably helped me. Because if I'd have gone on trial, it's so difficult. Like you said, I've played so many games, been at so many clubs, seen so many trialists. You've got to do something very special to get took on trial. So that might not have worked out. So fair play to Stuart Turner. He stood strong. And I think they came to watch me on the Saturday against Barwell and had a terrible game. I thought it was all over. Actually, I spoke to Bakes after and he said that he could just see that I was making runs. Although I didn't get much of the ball, that's what I felt after, that I was terrible. So I thought that was that dream over again. But on the Monday morning, there was a contract there for me. Dario said, listen, bring the lad up. You can train with us Monday morning and we'll get him a contract in place that Monday afternoon. So absolute whirlwind it was from that Saturday, having a terrible game, thinking it's over, driving to Crewe and getting it all sorted. And actually, I really enjoyed that first session. I felt quite good because I played in men's football. It wasn't such a shock to me.
What's, you know, you're from Leicestershire. What's the reputation of Crewe before you get there? You know, what have you heard of Crewe before? You heard of Dario, heard of Neil Baker?
Yeah, just obviously Dario putting the time in and coaching players. The development was a big part of the club. And at the time, obviously, once I had the interest, I sort of had a little bit of a look into it. And the players that they produced, it makes you think, because I did have a couple of options. It wasn't just Crewe. There was a couple of clubs after me at the time. And I can't even actually remember them now. But as soon as I knew that Crewe were there, they were developing players, especially raw players, which obviously I felt like I was at the time. It was a perfect fit for me. So that, I remember speaking to Bates and he said, we've got players like you. I think we had Steve Jones at the time, people that we got from them sort of situations that had a lot of raw talent that just need that little bit of coaching, sort of a nudge in the right direction, if you will. And they were willing to do that for me. So.
And you've just mentioned as well, the first training session, obviously Crewe, the season before you signed the summer, you know, they've just been promoted back up to what I think is the first division for one more year and then becomes the championship, the second tier. Did you find that tough to start with? I mean, my recollection of you when you signed is you were about half the size you are now currently in terms of muscle mass. Like,
exactly.
Is that tough going into like this professional club being, you know, the scrawny young lad that you were?
Well, I remember the first thing on that Monday session, we sort of did a warm-up. We mentioned Rich Walker. Him and Stephen Foster set me up, actually. So we set off on a run, and they went really quick to see if I'd react and burn past them. Just these little bits, just to see how you react. And I stayed in the bunch. I thought I'd keep myself to myself. And then we split off into strikers. So I had Dean Ashton one side and Rob Alls, the other two man mountains, as you can imagine. I'm looking up thinking, oh, my God, what am I doing here? But we had a couple of finishing sessions and I went round the keeper, once scored a goal. So I felt really at home until we went inside in the gym and Barry Beasley was our weight specialist then. And we did something called an upright row and I picked the bar up literally and I fell forward. Couldn't nearly fell flat on my face. So that went down really well with the lads. A bit of an icebreaker and I realised I had a lot of work to do in the gym, to be honest. But on the grass, I felt at home.
Luke, I just want to ask you, did you make any sort of friends immediately? Who did you sort of partner with when you were training and in the dressing room?
Crew. To be fair, Dino took me under his wing, definitely. Dean Ashton did. Steve Jones, he was from sort of similar background. He played non-league as well.
He was at Leeds before Markham. He signed for
So he sort of spoke to me about it, said, I love it here. There's not a lot of pressure to win games. It's about developing. And I felt straight away, I felt at home. And to be fair, back then, it was a bit harder to settle in dressing rooms. Now it's so easy because we all, you cross paths in the games. But I felt sort of at home quite quickly. And to be fair, to go from non-league to a fresh professional outfit could have been really tricky, but I was meant to feel at home straight away by, if I'm being honest, most of the squad.
Let's talk about some of the strikers then. You mentioned Dean, Steve Jones, Rob Hulse. Rob Hulse actually leaves that summer, doesn't he? He goes off to join West Brom. So you are in competition with Dean Ashton, Steve Jones. I think Michael Higden plays a lot your first year. Alan Smart is there as well. Did you always back yourself to get on the pitch, or did you look at these guys, you know, Alan Smart come from the Premier League, Dean Ashton's the new up-and-coming superstar. Did you back yourself that you were going to make it onto the pitch and be the leading striker?
Yeah, I don't know about that. I felt that I could progress. Even when I was at Quorn, I felt that slow progression. I think with me, I used to speak a lot about confidence in my interviews, and Dario pulled me once and said, Don't use that as a word. It can be seen sometimes as an excuse. But for me, coming from where I had, I needed that. I needed just that little bit of something, even getting on the pitch, doing something good. And then I developed a couple of skills. We always spoke. I used to drag it to the byline. Obviously, I was quite quick, so I was able to knock it. And Dario really constantly coached me doing them sort of things. And I started to do it, obviously, in training. And then from then, I just had that confidence to go forward. And looking at people like Dino, I just remember him getting his Adidas deals. He rolled up in a Porsche. Not that I was ever, it was nothing to do with money motivation, but I just seen that how it could be making progress like Dino. Dino was the young and up and coming player. And he was younger than me, obviously. So I just thought to myself, listen, I've got to catch up here. I'm making up for lost time. So I think having that raw edge that I had just to want to improve was really good for me.
You mentioned that it was quite a significant step up from the, I think, the Floodlit League, the East Midlands Alliance, to professional football, what's then the Championship or Division One. But it's only sort of 6 months after signing that you're scoring what turned out to be the winner at Selhurst Park against ex-Premier League keeper Thomas Myhre, you know, Norwegian international. What's it like, you know, all of a sudden you're doing that 6 months after signing?
Oh, it was obviously a dream come true, really. Stuart Turner actually came that game and he rang me about half five talking about the North and the South Circular, how hard it was to get down there. I'm thinking, I'm making my debut in a bit. I'm not that bothered about the traffic, do you know what I mean? It was, but I remember it was a freezing night, really murky, not the best situation for playing football. But for me, I was obviously absolutely ecstatic to get the starting berth. And yeah, the goal, obviously, it was a great touch. I think Justin was involved, Dino, Kenny Lunt played a big part in it as well. And I remember running through, and I had a clear picture of me. I knew once he'd come out, I was going to dink it, which was a little bit cheeky. But the biggest thing about it is I obviously slid on my knees to the Palace fans. So because I was absolutely buzzing, I didn't know where to go. People talk about celebrations and you don't, your reactions are just, your emotions are just gone. And mine were, I just didn't know what to do. So I slid on my knees, got in at half time, and Dario said, what are you effing doing? And I was like, what do you mean? He went, go and celebrate in front of our fans. I said, I thought they were. So I thought they were the crew fans, which just shows you my emotions all over the place. So, yeah, great night.
Did you, this is something that comes up quite a lot. Did you ever find yourself on the end of bollocking some Dario for things that you had no idea what you were being told off about?
Yeah, obviously coaching points. That's because he sees something in somebody that, like I say, that drag that I used to do, I used to pretend to cross it and sort of drag it down the line. It worked every time. So if I ever tried to do something different, he'd say, why are you doing that? Why would you try something different that I've never coached you to do? And then I had a habit of going too, I was, like I say, when I was quick, I had a habit of going too close to defenders and just getting stopped. He said, you don't need to. Give yourself that space, knock it. So if I ever changed something that he'd not coached me on, then I'd get a bit of a rollicking. It's actually weird now because I speak about it with, I've just been at Burton, obviously, with Nigel Clough, and I controlled the ball with the outside of my foot. I always have done, bit of a weird one, really. But Nigel used to hate that. But I told him it's what I was coached. When I got to crew, I was already at a level. It's going to be hard to coach that out of me now. So these things stick with you. But yeah, I'd be on the back of a telling off if I did something out of character.
Fair enough. It was just that one goal that first season, wasn't it? And if I remember rightly, you were mostly used in your games out wide. If I remembered that right, it was you and Jonah out wide and then Higdon and Dean up front. Is that frustrating for you, or is it just being on the pitch in the second tier? Is that enough to get you through, even though you're not in the position you want to be in?
Yeah, definitely. I think just getting a position on the pitch, like we've said, I didn't have the greatest of first touches, so it gave me a bit more space out wide. I used to feel that, and it gave me a chance to get at defenders. And in that first year, I think I had a shoulder injury as well that really hampered me. And I really worried about, have I done enough to show Dario? I thought I'd get, I must admit, I really thought I'd probably end up, that'd be me. But he showed faith in me and gave me another contract. So it was really good on that point.
Was that the shoulder injury when you went into the barrier at the away end at Gresty Road?
That was one of them. I think the actual time when we decided to do the operation was, I think we played Wigan at New Year's Eve, and I went past Jason DeVos. Don't know if you remember him. He was another man mounting. Just tackled me. I've landed on it. It was probably the third or fourth time I'd knocked it out. And the physio had said, listen, the more times you do it, the less you're leaving to operate on. So Dario basically said, listen, we'll get it done. I knew it was going to be 3 months, which was really hard to take because I felt like I was sort of, like I said, making progress. So, yeah, to have that injury was tough and I'm really worried. But I remember at the time, Billy Jones was having a few issues. I think this was, we'll talk about Billy Jones a bit later on when we go forward. But definitely once they took my, give me that second contract, that gave me that confidence, like I spoke about, to really progress once I got back from injury.
Yeah, the only reason I asked about that barrier injury, because, so my mum, she has a sort of a ranking for crew players, and it tends to be the ones that run around the most. So before you joined, it was Jonah. He was her favourite player. And then you signed and you became her favourite player. And I just remember she was quite annoyed, upset that you know, he's gone off injured again because he's got, it looked like a bad one. And I was like, I'm sure he's fine. I'm sure he'll come back. But yeah, she never likes goalkeepers because goalkeepers don't run around a lot and they always let goals in. But if you run around on a football pitch, then you're number one for my mum. So you're always one of her favourites.
Brilliant.
That's just making sure she's still listening.
That's all right.
What then, after the first season, after these injuries, then you're playing in all three of the seasons in the second tier that Crewe are back in there after the promotion. Did you have a favourite ground, or, you know, going to? Was there a place that you went to, I can't believe I'm playing here and I'm getting paid to do this?
Yeah, I think Sunderland, when I was at Crewe, was the first time I thought to myself, wow, to be involved in this. Because obviously, for me, Crewe was unbelievable. From where I'd come from, I thought, if I do this for the rest of my life, I'll be content. But then actually going there, seeing them get out of the cars in their suits, with their families, taking them to the players' lounge, it was just a really eye-opening to say that, because I never seen it like I said, that I always talk about that raw edge I had, just wanting to improve, but not really wanting, not being money motivated, just to progress in the game. So I'd, like I say, if I'd have been at Crewe and we progressed as a club, I'd have been happy to do that. And I've said that in previous interviews. So Sunderland was definitely one that I looked at and just thought, wow, this was amazing. On top of that hill, I just remember driving up.
Was that the game? It was 1-1 as well. Dean scored.
Yeah, we did all right. Yeah, we did. Yeah, we did okay, didn't we?
Yeah, I was. Yeah,
we did that a lot of times, didn't we? We went away Leeds. We had a great result. Leeds as well. Obviously, that was a great game. We had a few really good results away from home around Christmas time, if I remember as well.
Yeah, that Sunderland one. I think it was fairly late in the season. I think it pretty much guaranteed we were staying up that first year back. I just remember that.
Was that the one when they had Kevin Kyle up front and we had Richard Walker at the back, and it was like two titanic giant slow mountains going up against each other? It was quite a good sight.
Rich didn't pull out much, did he? So it was a good battle, that one.
Did you have a favourite game in the? Let's talk about just the three years in the Championship. A favourite game that you played in the Alex for that 3 year period?
Got to be the last game when we stayed up. Obviously, I set a couple of goals up that game. Obviously, one for Higgy and one for Jonah. It never really felt pressure in football apart from that game. I remember the build up to it was terrible. The amount of press involved, and obviously we needed to win the game. And I did feel it before the game and in the start of the game. I didn't think we started that well. But the second half just felt like, I'm not going to let this happen. Just give me the ball. Felt so confident. And once we got that first goal, I could just feel it coming. So, yeah, that's definitely one that... And I've got a picture still actually in my garage of me smiling after. I think Justin Cochran's just in the background and Rivo. So, yeah, it brings back really good memories, that one.
I was in the Gresty Road end for that match. So I was right behind the goal where Jonah tapped in your cross for the winner late on. And, yeah, it was pretty crazy behind the goal. But I remember sitting on the wall on Gresty Road outside the old ticket office after the game, and I was so wiped out by the game that a policewoman came over to me, and I was with my then-girlfriend, now-wife, and I was just completely drained. And the police officer said to my now-wife, oh, what's he taken? And my wife said, no, he hasn't taken anything. He's just shouted too much at the football.
Oh, brilliant.
I mean, I took a girlfriend, now ex-girlfriend, to that game, and she genuinely thought I was going to have a heart attack at one point when it was 2-1, when we scored that second, and we were just waiting for, it was the Gillingham result, wasn't it, we were waiting for. And
she I remember Eugene Bock, did he score for Forest as well?
Yeah, and then we signed him.
Yeah, we did that.
Yeah, she never went to another Crew game with me. We didn't really last much longer, to be honest. moving on from that.
Just one of my memories, and I think it was obviously as Stu said, you'd been mainly playing sort of off the left. I guess it'd be like a left inside forward, you'd call it now. But I think the time when most Crew fans probably realised that we had a serious player on our hands was that goal against Millwall. And you won it in the air, and then you kind of like you got your own flick on almost. You sort of got up after win, challenging for it in the air, went and won the second ball and then cut inside and smashed it into the far corner with your right foot. And I think that was the winner in a game against Millwall at Gresty Road. I think it might have been your second season. And that was the moment when we thought, flipping heck, this is a hell of a play we've got here.
Yeah, that was definitely, obviously, we talk about those moments. That was a platform for me. I remember, I think, Semmerball might have come out with a ball and stuck it up quite high. I was always quite good in the air. I felt like I had a great leap. So got up, won that head on. And then I think Muscat was playing. I heard a lot about this player who's a dirty player. Don't go anywhere near him. But I didn't have any cares. Imagine, I was on the grass just running about, basically. So I think Lawrence, I went up for an header with him and then cut inside. And obviously hit the ball really well. I remember going over to celebrate and I nearly headbutted Dino. I was that excited, just like this. And he said, well, hold on, calm down now, we'll go again. And he just brought me right back down to earth, which was brilliant. So,
I thought one of the ones you might have mentioned as well, Luke, I don't know, I'm guessing, but are you a Leicester fan?
Yes.
Did that contribute to you scoring within 1 minute of the game in your third season at the club in the 2-2 draw? Is that a game you were especially psyched up for, or is it just a coincidence?
Yeah, definitely. I think... every time I went against them, without trying to be too emotional and too bitter, but I always had that bit of grit between my teeth. And I don't think I ever lost against them, any team I've ever gone back with, for being too small. And I made sure I clattered a few of the defenders most of the times as well. So, yeah, that was definitely a good one. I think it was Mossy crossed the ball really early and I had a lot of people there because all my family are Leicester fans. So, yeah, that was definitely one that one of my favourite games as well.
You say your family are Leicester fans. How did they speak to you afterwards?
Yeah, they're a Luke Varney fan before Leicester, but yeah, it was a tough situation for some of them, but close family, they were still on board, thankfully.
Sliding on your knees in front of the away fans for that one, or?
Nah, I stopped and I ran, I think I remember, and ended up sort of stopping, thinking, let's not show them that I was too bitter and annoyed by it, and cracked on with the game.
The other massive day in Crew's history, other than the Coventry game where we stayed up on the last day of the season, was the sale of Dean Ashton earlier on that season. And you mentioned, you know, going to Elland Road, but we went there 1-2-0 on the back of an amazing run that took us to the verge of the Championship playoffs. You know, probably I don't think it's arguable, it's the best team in the club's history. I think that day you might have come on for Dean Ashton.
I did, yeah.
And that was obviously his last game for the club. He moved on to Norwich. But what a team that was.
Yeah, like I said, looking at the Quorn players, looking up to them, but then I felt like I knew Dino was going to progress. I knew Rob Hulse would go and play for a better team. These players were such a big... I sort of learned so much in a short period of time, not just about on the pitch. They were just top blokes. Dino was so quiet and mild-mannered. Rob was a bit more, you won't take no crap. And I learned a little bit of that edge off him as well. And it was great to see him. To be fair, when Dino left, I did feel a little bit, is it too early? Oh, I'd have loved him to stay to learn a bit more, but maybe it helped me, give me that little bit of space, a little bit of freedom. They say sometimes when the main player leaves, it leaves that space for someone to fill it. So that might have played in my favour as well. Yeah, great team. Throughout, you look at the strength and depth we had as well. We had great players coming in off the bench, and it was fantastic to go to Elland Road and get the result. I remember being on that bus, and we always had that underdog mentality, but going to Leeds was amazing. And like I say, the Sunderland games, but definitely after that Leeds game, we come away thinking we're doing something special here.
Yeah, and the glory days. Let's go on to, so the third season you're at the club, the Alex are relegated. And as I've said before with other ex-players, it's the last time at the moment that the club has been at that level. But the last game before we are relegated, there is someone that comes on at half time, and he instantly makes a mark, and he's going to have a big, big part to play in your next year of football, Nicky Maynard. Were you aware, were the club aware just what he was going to do as a professional player in the first team?
I thought he was a cocky little git, to be honest, but I knew that having that, he was destined to be something special. And we'll speak about that, I'm sure, moving on, but Dario knew what he had coming through his setup, which is amazing, really. First team manager now, they'll get reports off sort of assistant coaches and youth coaches, whereas Dario was coaching the first team, 14, 15, downwards, you know what I mean? And he told me about people like Nicky Maynard, Billy Jones, Gary Roberts. He knew in 3 years they'll be playing in his first team. And I just thought that to have that setup and that culture, to know what's coming, to not have to go out and spend because you know what's coming in is unbelievable. So, yeah, we knew about Nicky. And again, with Dino leaving, it left spaces for young players. They might not have progressed Nicky as quick as they did if they'd had the players in the first team squad. So, yeah, we sort of hit the ground running quite quickly in training, if I remember.
So that season back in what is now called League One, the two of you scored 44 goals between the two of you, which is, I mean, it's a seriously impressive number. But then I was having a little look at the squad at the time, and you're up against Luke Rogers, Ryan Lowe, Rodney Jack's back. There's a young Tom Pope. It's not like you were the only two strikers at the club at the time, but you're 44 goals. You know, how did that happen?
I just, like I said, we sort of hit the ground running in training. We used to do like overs and things. You know, when you've got, I never really spoke about it. I've spoke about it previously about not having relationships, not having partnerships. I still text Nicky now and we call each other partner, which is great. And I didn't really have that with any other team I played for. So we used to do flicks around the corners, which Dario wasn't really that into. He'd rather you get hold of the ball and not to try and be too tricky, but it gave us that freedom. And quite a lot of it came off early doors, which helped. I remember Dean Saunders coming in. Dario asked him to come and do a forward session. And Dario just said, watch his pair. And we did a few little bits of our patterns of play and stuff. And Dean actually pulled us over and said, listen, if I get a manager's job, I'm taking both of you. And again, the little bits like that just make you feel great. Do you know what I mean? And give us both that confidence boost. And we bounced off each other. Like I say, I think I did a lot of the legwork. Nicky's probably more skillful than me. And Nicky had a great ability to shoot when you didn't expect it. When the keeper was off balance or it was under his feet. Nicky was a much better finisher than me. Naturally, he always had that. But I think we both worked well and bounced off each other.
What were the other guys like? Luke Rogers, Ryan Lowe. Luke Rogers, fairly fiery character.
Not half. We travelled in with him for a bit back to Kibosh. We're having road rage 3 times a week. But yeah, he was a top man. Obviously, he was so strong. He was like a little brute, weren't he? And he caused murders for defenders. So we had those great options. Ryan Lowe still to this day. Him and Kenny Lump were two of the best players I played with for that ability to slide balls through. I always knew if I made a run. There was a couple of games, I think, to a Northampton game away, where Lowy's not even looked where I am. He's just slid balls down the side, and I scored a couple of goals. And Kenny Lunt had that ability. It was brilliant to see. And Rodney Jack, obviously, was a club legend. Learned a lot from him, just his directness and seeing him run with the ball. And he was a great athlete. So, yeah, we had some great players to. But that's good, that competition. Popey, obviously, coming in was. I felt like I helped Popey initially because he'd come from a similar background to me, and Popey's gone on to do really well as well. So,
yeah, I actually, as part of my research for this, I ended up sort of on a Tom Pope wormhole, sort of just going through articles. And I read something that I didn't remember until it sort of sparked a memory, that he left Crewe and said that he never really felt that he was getting positive feedback in his coaching. He was always told when he was getting something wrong, but never when he was getting something right. Is that how you sort of saw it with, I mean, I think he was mostly talking about Good John, and to be honest, like Thor was one who I think was a bit after your time. So maybe that's what it was. But I don't know. What was your feedback on the coaching situation then?
Yeah, I wouldn't see, not in my time. I don't think there was ever really a negative output as regards to coaching, if you were willing to put the time in. Popey was, I think he'll be honest, Popey wasn't easy to coach. He was an old school striker. Scored some unbelievable goals in areas that I would never get into. Even just recently, come to Cheltenham and played against his FA Cup and got a hat-trick, scored two headers from nowhere, where he's just flew in and got that real ability, scored a lot of goals, and he's a handful. Stick the ball up to him and he used to be a bit of a brute. So whether he was a Crewe-type player, I'm not sure, but in the time that I was there, it was a positive outlook towards his coaching. But like I said, with Pope, I don't think he was a player that needed to be coached. They took him for what he was, a target and a finisher. So, yeah, in his time, like you say, Good John, I didn't hear as many great things about that period. So I speak to Andy White still, who was still there then, and he struggled under him. So maybe that was part of that reason.
He's not someone we've managed to get on the pod yet, Good John. I'm not sure when that one's going to happen, but maybe some point in the future he can put his side across. I just want to talk about the league. I'm going to talk to you in a minute about the cup games that year, because there's obviously some fairly important cup games that go on that season. But the league, Crewe finished, I would say, a disappointing 13. We've just talked about the strikers, but in that squad, you've got Ben Williams, who's coming in goal. You've got Billy Jones making his way in the game. Neil Cox, been there, seen everything. John Otsemabor, David Vaughan, young Gary Roberts, young Michael O'Connor. Is that a disappointment to finish 13th in League One with that squad?
Yeah, it might be for the fans, and I understand that completely. But like I said, it didn't feel like that to us, because there wasn't that much pressure for league position. Or to win games, if I'm being honest. We knew we were trying to develop players like Billy Jones, like you've mentioned. And there was always that ethos that we're trying to progress players up, and then maybe if we could keep the players long enough, then we'd have a great run in the league. But always we lost those players, didn't we? Once they'd showed a lot of progress, people know if you're taking Crewe players or manufacturers of players that have been at Crewe, you're getting a good player. So we ended up losing those players. So yeah, it was probably disappointing within the dressing room, but we sort of knew the outlook and what the plan was for the team and the squad.
Let's move on to the cups then. I've told this story before. I think it was when Lee Bell came on. The Man United game, sold out at Gresty Road. It's on Sky Sports. I'm not there. I'm at uni in Plymouth, so it's a bit far for me to travel on. I think it was a Wednesday night, not a Tuesday night.
But wet Wednesday night as well. It was terrible, the weather.
Yeah. I just remember feeling absolutely heartbroken when Kieran Lee scored in the 119th minute. But you'd had a bit of a moment before that, about 72 minutes on. You managed to score a goal live on Sky against Man United. That's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. You say it was full arm. I must have had two coaches come up from Leicester. The Sunday team I used to play for, the pub full of them. So they come up for the game as well. A lot of them Man U fans as well. So they had a lot of Glory supporters back in them days at the Man United. So, yeah, so that was brilliant. I just spoke briefly then about the weather. The only bad thing about it, my hair looks terrible in the wet. So the only pictures I've got of that game, I look horrendous. So great memories of the game, but the photos aren't great.
It's funny you mentioned that, actually, because I was having a look, and I think one of the pictures that we might have used, if you, you know, if you're now listening to this, you've probably seen the promo, is there's a picture of you just after you scored, and there's a couple of Man United players looking really, really disappointed, and you're looking quite nonchalant at the time, like you're just like, yeah, I scored a goal, it's what I do, I'm Luke Vardy. I can't imagine that's how you were really feeling as you were running off to celebrate that goal.
Well, I say this, the only, I think back to now, the Palace goal, I didn't have control of my emotions and I was so buzzing. But then after that, I felt like I was here. I felt like the Man U goal was brilliant. I loved it and even all the goals leading up to it. But I was always thinking, I'm improving. I want to keep going. I don't want this to be it. I don't want to think I've scored against Man U, that's it. I've hit the big time. I was always desperate to keep going and keep improving. So although I was buzzing, it was still time to go to work. So that's how I felt.
Fair enough. I mean, again, looking at the team, Thomas Kuschek in goal, Heinz, Brown, Silvestre, Kieran Richardson in defence. I think Alan Smith played, Solskjaer scored, didn't he? So it must be nice to know, even though, you know, you've just said that's not it, my season, my career hasn't peaked there, but it must be nice to know that you can score goals against players like that.
Yeah, I've set my PT company up now. So in my garage, I've got all my shirts up, the one from the Premier League, but Wes Brown one's up there, and people might think, sometimes people come in and think, why have you got a Wes Brown shirt? But it's so sentimental to me, because that night we had a right battle, I scored a goal, and he actually said to me after the game, you were brilliant today, which again was really good to hear. So yeah, that one's really great, and I love looking at it, must admit, when I'm in the garage.
What's the feeling in the dressing room then? Obviously, like I say, I've got two of my housemates, Man United fans, sat next to me in the student union in Plymouth. I'm devastated. Are the players devastated, or is it just the fact that you've taken them so close to getting a result?
That was the biggest feeling, that we ran them so close. It was we were gutted, being honest, because to get that victory in that, because obviously it was the Wigan game, the one before that. Did we beat Wigan to get to play Man U? Or was that a different cup game?
Give me one sec and I'll find out.
Because me and Nicky played really well in that game as well. That might have been on telly.
Yeah. So we had 2-0, really, 2-0 at home to Wigan.
Yeah.
Rodney and Nicky scored.
Yeah. That was a great night. And I've got a great photo of me and Nicky that night as well. So, yeah, it just felt like we'd had an unbelievable cup run. And to finish so cruelly, like you say, was, disappointed. But overly, I'm sure, we, looking back, we were all really pleased with what we'd achieved over them two nights.
So moving on then to the other cup game that broke my heart that season. Again, another game that was live on Sky, away at Doncaster. You've just said we did all right to get to the third round of the Carling Cup, but we got to the northern final of what was then a good competition to be in and a good competition to win. Again, I think you scored that night as well, didn't you?
Lowy again, putting me through, just another great slide ball and slided it in. And did that put us 3-0 up, would it have been? Is that right?
2-0 up in the away game, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then 5-3, I think we were up on aggregate at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. Both legs were crazy, weren't they? There was goals. Yeah. Left, right, and centre.
3-3 and then 3-2.
We had a massive rivalry with Doncaster at the time. I don't know if you'd have felt it, but within the squads we did, I remember I had a bit of a thing with Billy Sharp. He was blabbing off about how many goals he's going to get, and he's going to be this and he's going to be that. And at the time, me and Nicky were thinking we'll show him. So yeah, we had a lot of good games against Doncaster, but that one was probably more disappointing than the Man U one, because we feel like we should have got to that final.
Yeah, I know what you mean about the rivalry. They became sort of one of the teams that I just didn't like. I think it's mostly from that season. I still can't really listen to Jason Price objectively when he does punditry.
That was with a big air, wasn't it? I'm the same boat. I couldn't stand it either, to be honest.
So I'm guessing the feeling in the dressing room was more deflated from that one than the Man United game, like coming so close. I think it would have taken us to the Millennium, not Wembley, that year, but to get to a final.
Yeah, and that's probably, that was another learning curve for me. And I think for the rest of the squad, thinking when on a football pitch, you're never there until the final whistle. That was a big learning curve for me, to think that keep going and keep going, because you just can get punished so late on. Some of the goals we see now, 96, 97 minutes, managers go on about it, and it's so cliche about going to the final whistle. it's a 95 minute game. It stung us that night.
Do you think Crewe being on Sky twice in fairly high profile for the clubs, you know, the club normal level of profile, and you scoring in both of those games, do you think that contributed to the move that you made in the summer?
Yeah, maybe. I think you don't realise the power of, obviously, the TV, because I got a lot of messages after those two games. No one normally messages me throughout in normal Saturday games, but that just shows you the amount. And as well, obviously, you've got to think about who we're playing against. Teams are coming. I used to look at Crewe's scout list. I spoke to Graham McGarry about this. Crewe's scout list is amazing. You look at it every week. It's got every top team on it. It's scary. So I used to look at that. And knowing that these managers are going to watch me against some of the best players in the country here, so I've got to show that I can mix with them. So, yeah, it was good to know that.
You talked about when you first came into the club and being a fairly slight but athletic kid, and looking up to some of the senior pros and people like Dean Ashton, Rob Hulls. By the time we get through to that season in League One, obviously, you know, you're one of the main men. You're one of the senior pros. There's a lot of younger kids coming through. What was it like having your name chanted by all the Crewe fans every week? And two, you know, did you feel the responsibility and a kind of, you know, did you feel that senior pro role that you'd developed into?
I didn't probably feel that until the late years at my former clubs, because at Crewe still, I always still felt like I was developing. And I didn't really, within the dressing room, maybe within the lads, but I didn't feel it myself, because I still felt like a young player, although I started at 20. Feel like I lost 3 years, so I still felt always like I was playing catch up a little bit, like I said, with Dino being younger than me. But on the pitch, that's where I speak about it all the time, about doesn't matter what you like in the dressing room, I always think you gain your respect from the football pitch, and that's what I always try to do. It was important to me, because even though I've played with lads that I didn't really like in the dressing room, but if they're doing the stuff on the Saturday, it doesn't matter. So although I like to think that I haven't really had any bad references on and off the field. So it helped me on both stages, really.
Tim's just reminded me there about your song. It was simply just Luke Varney, wasn't it? That was it at the Alex. Yeah. Did you ever have anything better than that? Because, I mean, it's nice to have people sing your name, but it's a fairly boring chant, that one, isn't it?
Yeah, Blackpool got really adventurous 1 year. We had This Is Crazy, Who Needs Van Persie? We've got Luke Varney. I think I must have had a good game against Man U or Arsenal. Leeds used to sing Varney Army, which I quite liked, because Leeds are obviously quite tribal, and that was quite a good chant, and that used to go quite well. And then, if I'm being honest, most of my other clubs, they used to boo me, so I heard that quite a lot.
Fair enough. Let's move on then to the move away. Whilst I was doing a little bit of research for this, I read back that Dario seemed to think it was a surprise that you were moving on that summer. He said he wasn't really expecting anyone to come in, but once the offer of £2 million from Charlton came in, it was, you know, it was in your interest, it was in the Crewe's interest to accept that. Is that how you remember? Were you going into the summer expecting to turn up at Crewe again next year?
Yeah, I wasn't forcing a move. I hadn't even spoke about, like I said, and this is nowhere of a lie, just from doing a podcast, I'd have been happy to stay there for the rest of my life. I was loving playing football. I'd signed a new contract. I was on, I thought, fantastic money at the time from where I'd been used to being in the factory. So I was more than happy to stay. Thinking back now, Dario had said that he turned down a deal in January from Luton. I think they'd offered £1 million. And he didn't tell me at the time, which... Again, it wouldn't have mattered to me. I think he thought that I might have been saying, I want to go, but I wasn't keen on going down to Luton. I think Mark Newell was in charge at the time. He'd been at Crewe, had he, with Dario. So
he had a small spell.
So he told me that was turned down. And I haven't really said a lot about this, but in the back end of that season, I spoke to Gareth Southgate. He was at Middlesbrough. He actually come down to my house. So he sat in a room with me and the chairman at Corn, saying that once we've got rid of Viduka, we'll sign. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I've had to step into Dean Ashton's shoes now. I've got to fill Mark Viduka's. I don't know if I've caught up for that one. So we'd agreed the deal. And I was really looking forward to that. Started to think about areas living up north. And then a scouse agent rang me called Simon Conning from nowhere and just said, I've got a manager that wants to meet you in London. So I spoke to Stuart and he said, come on, let's jump on the train. It won't hurt. Got off the train and Alan Pardew was there waiting for me in the hotel, and basically near enough doubled my money, promised me lots of crosses. Everything that I wanted to hear was so refreshing that we've watched you play. We feel like you'd fit into this team. We've just been relegated. We're going to get a lot of fresh players in, young, hungry players. So it just suited. The only frustrating bit about it is, and I still to this day, I really regret it. Dario didn't know a lot about that day when I'd gone down on that train. I don't know how he didn't. Probably my fault, a bit of my agent's fault as well. But Alisson rang me, Alisson Bowler at the time, and said that Dario was really upset because he wanted to be the one to tell you, which looking back now, I fully respect. And I really should have waited for that. But I was probably being guided by my agent and Stuart at the time. So, yeah, that's one my only regret, really, that it wasn't Dario that told me and sort of sent me away with best wishes. So,
Was it the dance that sealed it for Alan Pardew? Did he do his little dance in the hotel room?
Yeah, I think so. And I had a cheap suit on, so I'm hoping that sealed the deal. So back in them days, you turned up in suits, don't you? You see them now. They've got hats on and everything when they're signing. So
maybe you can make that as part of your PT training.
Yeah.
Succeed.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I even did it, you know, when I signed for Blackpool. And I walked in the canteen, and if you've ever been to Blackpool's training ground, it's just a big ports having right by the airport. Bit rough, to be honest. And then I walked in and Holloway turned around, all the lads turned around, it went silent. He went, well, he looks the part, lads. And I thought, oh, that's all right. So, a little bit of an icebreaker.
What's the difference then at Charlton? Obviously, the Valley, it's quite a bit of a different stadium to what is now called the Mournflake Stadium in Crewe, Gresty Road, as you and I know it. What else is different about the club?
The biggest thing for me is, we spoke about the no pressure in playing. I went into a pressure cooker in the middle of London. It was South London, shall we say. It was frightening, really. Because obviously coming down from the Premier League, they're hoping to bounce back straight away. I wasn't allowed that time to develop. I felt like I was ready to play in the Championship, but sort of that coaching skill that Dario had, he always said to me about playing with a smile on my face, because when I scowl, I'm aggressive and it knocks out that freedom that I play with. And I did that a lot at Charlton initially, because I was probably trying to grab it too soon. But I think I got an injury in pre-season, which didn't help. We played Chelsea behind closed doors. All of their big players were playing. And I think SCN literally chopped me. And I was out 6 weeks. And Pardew ended up just kept saying, injured, always saying it to me as if, like, there's nothing I can do about it. And then took me quite a while to get back from that, which didn't help being the new signing. Obviously, the fans expected big things from me, but I got back fit. And then we played Ebbsfleet away in a reserve friendly and scored a hat trick. And I just thought, yeah, I'll show you now. So I sort of felt really good then and sort of had half a decent start, I think, if I remember correctly.
I've got some questions on your time in Blackpool, the Premier League season that you played there, shortly. But I think it would take too long for us to go through a season by season account of your time in the Championship.
Yeah.
So if I miss any teams off, then let me know. But I've got Charlton, Derby, Sheffield Wednesday, Portsmouth, Leeds, Blackburn, Ipswich and Burton as your Championship team. Sort of like a classic who's who of a Championship club there. So what I'm going to ask you to do, Luke, is just ask you to name a few favourites. We don't want least favourites because we're not really about sort of naming and shaming. But which was your favourite team to play for out of that list in the Championship?
The Championship. Sheffield Wednesday, being honest, were an amazing club to play for. They're sort of working class people. We know about the area. It's the fans were brilliant for me, and I went on loan as well, which was great. I was taken in straight away and separate managers took me back. And even to this day, when I see Sheffield Wednesday fans, they're so grateful of what I did while I was there. So definitely there. Leeds was obviously a monster of a club. Unfortunately, they still felt like there was a Champions League team, not a Championship team. We were under so much pressure there by the fans. But that place was, I remember we got off a plane at Slovenia once on a pre-season tour. There's 2,000 waiting for us. And you just realise the monstrosity it is. You see them up and down the country. If I ever stop at a service, it's always a Leeds fan that will come up to me. So those two were definitely ones that stand out. And I love my time at Ipswich as well. Being down there with Mick, great manager, top man, and my family loved the time down there as well. So
that might be an answer to the next one then. Who was your favourite coach or manager in the championship that you played under?
Mick would definitely be up there. Just so honest, brutally honest, in fact, in times. Mick's one of those that, you know, if you had a good result, he'd actually say to you, get yourself out tonight and have a few beers. And I used to think he trusts me, you know, to say that, because you wouldn't get that off many managers. But then on the other end, he said, if I find out you've been out tonight, they'll be able to pay Monday when we've not had such a good result. So, but having that trust within the squad was great. I loved working with Neil Warnock. He, again, arm round, you know, sort of treated you with that respect and give us that bit of freedom. And we'll go on to, obviously, probably, I love playing for Holloway, but that was obviously in the Premier League year.
It's a bit of a who's who of managers, Luke, really, isn't it, from the last 20 years? Pardew, Clough, Holloway, Grady, Warnock, Appleton, McCarthy.
Oh, there was a bit of a stage where I was getting rid of them too fast, to be honest. I'm thinking I'm doing something wrong here. They were getting sat left, right and centre. And I was always on the... People always say, what are you doing? I was like, I'm trying, do you know what I mean? I'm trying to keep hold of them. And it's weird because they all had those different strengths. Obviously, Daniel's coaching ability will never be rivaled by anyone I ever worked with. But with Mick, just that honesty, that integrity, you wanted to run through brick walls for him. Neil Warnock, I think, as a man manager, just understood. I think I had a decent start at Leeds the first year. I think I scored a good few goals. And he pulled me out of the team. We played Cardiff away. And I was thinking, I played well last game. But he didn't speak to me from Friday training until we got to the changing room, sat there. So we walked down to the pitch. I'm sulking a little bit, as you do. He's put his arm around me and just said, it's nice not to have that nervousness that you normally have, those butterflies. And I thought to myself, he's so true. So all he did was take me out of the limelight for that one game and then start him in the next game, which I'll never understand. But it worked. He just knew and understood players. So, yeah, I enjoyed that as well.
I've got a couple more, but I'm just going to go back to what you just said there about Dario. Is that the case? Was he the best coach in terms of understanding football and making players? I mean, his record stands for itself in developing players, but is that your understanding as well? Is he the best at getting players and making them better?
Definitely. I think just the time he's prepared to take to coach one player. I remember, I bet the other players used to get fed up, but he'd just keep drilling it into me. Like I say, those bits that you thought I could do, and having that this day and age doesn't happen. They haven't got time to individually coach players. There's so much pressure to win games, and Dario was allowed that time because did the same rough diamond. To develop players like me that have had no to finish at 14, I've not. At Crewe, you get the coaching that they get. I used to watch under 40s and think, oh my God, the stuff they're doing in that little dome, the technical ability. Like I did the game on Saturday, the Burton game, and still seeing Murph's Cruyff turn, all those players.
A bit slower now, though, isn't he?
Yeah, a bit slower. But we talk about the Crewe way, and technically, I don't know. I wish I'd have had a little bit more of that, maybe. But I think, like I say, my rawness and my edge was how I got through. So
we spoke to AD Moses a couple of months ago, and he said he found it weird that he'd be in the changing room, the first team changing room, and then he said, I think it was Ashley Westwood. He was sat next to when Ashley Westwood was a 10-year-old boy as part of the youth academy. Was that odd for you as well as an outsider? Like, why are these youth players in the first team dressing room? Why are they here?
Definitely, and I think obviously there's a lot of scrutiny with Dario, and I could stand up to him till I'm blue in the face and just say that all managers should have took a leaf out of his book then, knowing what he's got coming into his first team. I think it was actually for him to go down and coach those other teams. It was just unbelievable to see, and that culture of knowing, like I said, the Gary Roberts, the Billy Jones, the Nicky Maynards. It was just the coaching was second to none. And like I said, I've seen it firsthand because I used to spend a lot of time up there. I stayed in Newcastle under Lyme, so I was spending a lot of time around the club and just seeing the culture, and I just thought it was brilliant.
Okay, going back to our championship bests or favourites, next one I've got for you, Luke, is favourite goal that you scored whilst you're in the championship tour.
Oh, I'm trying to think of some now. in that year. I'm trying to think of important ones. I obviously scored one for Burton, a header at Barnsley. We're not mentioned Burton yet. And I didn't play a lot of games under Clough. There was a few bits that I used to do that annoyed him. And he was that sort of coach that if you weren't willing to change, then you'd suffer, obviously, with playing time. But we ended up seeing eye to eye. But I scored a header that kept us up. We drew 1-1. And that's all we needed, a point. So that was an important goal. I remember being at the end of season two, not playing a lot through the season, but felt so important because I'd scored that goal. And actually, the chat we had after the season that you do, Cloughy said, listen, make sure you enjoy your summer because you basically scored the goal that's kept us in the championship. So, yeah, that was a real special moment for me.
Would that be, so the answer to the last question I've got, which is favourite memory, would that be that one or is there another one from that period?
I think always scoring, you know, we spoke about Leeds. Every time I'd scored for Leeds, it felt special. Although it was in the FA Cup, I scored a goal against Tottenham. We beat Tottenham in the third round. And they had them all. Bale was playing. All of them were playing. And I was having a bit of a hard time off the fans at the time. And I've been put through on the halfway line. Literally ran the halfway down the pitch, cut inside and hit it far corner. And I didn't really celebrate. And Paul Green actually said to me then, you're a Mardy git, weren't you? And I said, nah. I had reasons at the time because I was getting a bit of stick from the fans. But inside, I was absolutely buzzing because that was a massive goal for me as well.
Okay, let's move on to that season with Blackpool then. I find it odd. I don't know if you can sort of shed some light on this, but you're at Derby and Derby are a championship team and then Blackpool, just been promoted to the Premier League, asked to you to go on loan. Is that, how does that come across that the team in the league above is asking for a loan signing?
Well, the man we've just been speaking about, takes credit for that, Dario. I think, I don't know how we spoke to Ian Holloway, but Holloway was basically saying that I need a player off the left, someone that's dynamic. He used to play with a front three and give you freedom. And Dario literally said Luke Varney would be ideal for that role. He's not playing at Derby. This was in pre-season. So I played at Matlock away. I was always in the second string team at Derby. First team would play their good game on the Tuesday. On the Wednesday, there'd be a game against Matlock. So I was there thinking, what am I doing here? But I always, even in those games, apply myself properly. I think that goes from me even working in the factory, being hungry and trying to do well. I always made sure I trained properly. Even if I wasn't in a good place at a club, I always knew that train the right way because your next opportunity will come. So I played at Matlock away. Dario had told Holloway to watch me. So if I'd have decided to, say, toss that game off, which I could have easily, which a lot of senior pros do when you're playing these so-called reserve games, I played properly, did quite well. I think I scored a goal. And after that game, I think it was the week, because normally you play your pre-game on the Saturday and then your first game, league game on the Saturday after. So anything in between, if you play in that, you know you're not in that starting lineup on the Saturday. So got to the first game of the season at Derby, Pride Park, Cardiff at home. Nigel Clough didn't put the team up until you got in the dressing room. I've walked in. I think I had a few beers after that Matlock game as well because I was delighted that I'd done all right. And then I got in the dressing room. My name was up front starting on there and I'm thinking, I've started no games pre-season for you and you've started me in the first game of the season. I actually did okay, set the goal up and felt really good about myself after the game. On the Sunday, my agent rang me and said, we're going to Blackpool tomorrow. I'm like, sorry. I said, I've just started for Derby yesterday. Did really well. And Nigel had only played me, so Ian could see me in the first team. So just shows you how it works, the footballing world. So I drove up there, obviously thinking, I want to play in the Premier League here. Absolutely. Am I ready for this? And on the way up, I had a phone call off Neil Warnock again, who was at QPR, saying that we're going to get promoted, offer me really good bonuses, a year's contract. So I'm thinking, do I go to Blackpool that are going to struggle in the Premier League or do I go to a championship team that there's a good chance they're going to get promoted? So I just thought I couldn't turn this opportunity down. I might not get another chance. Sat there looking at the Blackpool Tower thinking the kids will love it eventually if I have any. So it was, I took that decision to sign and I'm so glad I did.
I was going to ask, is this the best season in your career because you're in the Premier League or is it a difficult season because, you know, no disrespect to Blackpool, but they're not really a Premier League team. This is the only season they've been in that level since, or, you know. So what's your feeling as a player playing in that team? You know, you're losing more games than you're not.
Yeah, but even like we talk about the pressure of not winning games, that it was even less there. That I'd never forget it. We had an unbelievable group of lads that knew they were. We always had an underdog mentality, and I carried that throughout my career, especially even going to Blackpool. But after that, I used to look next to me and look at these Premier League players, and I thought, there's 11 players going onto a football pitch. Who knows what could happen here? And a lot of the time, we ran them quite close, and we had some really good results. So obviously, we did the double on Liverpool. We had some fantastic. We beat Stoke away, Sunderland away. And bearing in mind, in that period when we beat Stoke and Sunderland away, we had no training pitch. Holloway's marking out a football pitch on a beach. There was dog turd everywhere. It was an absolute eye-opener to me. But we'd get in on a Monday after being hot, after had a good hiding somewhere, say a 4-0, and Ian would just be screaming about how many chickens he's lost to foxes on the weekend. So he just literally take you away from that ill feeling about football, because Mondays can be difficult. No one likes a Monday going back to work, but off the back of a defeat, it's really tough at a football club. So he had that ability to really sort of make us feel good about ourselves and hit the ground running for the next week after a defeat.
Is he like his the persona he tries to play on TV, or is that what you see is what you get, or is it played up for the cameras?
He's crackers, really is. I remember walking in, and obviously I knew Vaughan, he was the one that really made me feel welcome there. So I walked in and sat next to Vaughan, and all I heard was him screaming, swearing, like, you know, he's got that cackly voice quite high, isn't it? And I don't know what he's screaming about. Then a dog walked in the changing room, and I'm just like, what's going off here? I'm supposed to be playing in the Premier League. So, yeah, he's just absolutely nuts. And then the odd time we turn up for training, and he'd just take us to the calf, and we'd have a full English, wouldn't train, take us for a game of poker. And it shouldn't have been what should have been happening, but it just worked. It was just so dynamic, the team. We just got the ball in areas, and we were like the Red Arrows. As a forward on that left-hand side, he'd go mad at me if I stayed there all game. He wanted me on the right, he wanted me up front, through the middle. So it was just, it was a brilliant year. And it's got to have been my best year. Not even that it was in the Premier League, just because the group of lads we had and just having that freedom to play our football.
You've just mentioned David Vaughan then. I think the fact that you were both there meant myself and probably a few other Crew fans sort of had a little soft spot for Blackpool that side, just because the two of you were there and, you know, we sort of counted you as our own. I had a little look at your stats earlier for that season. You scored 5 goals in the Premier League. I'm not sure if you're aware of this. I'm sure you probably are, but all of the goals that you scored meant something that season. You didn't score in a loss. You either won the game by a goal or you drew the game. Did you know that? You're nodding as though that's not a new information for you.
Yeah, because obviously I go back now and most of my highlights, you tend to put those ones in. And looking back at those goals, they were all in games that we had positive results. And I think scoring the 5 goals, I'm really, I've got a little bit of regret about it, because I remember Ian going to, we didn't train in December because of our pitch. He went to Barcelona for a few days to watch them train. And he came back and completely changed our style. We started trying to pass the ball out from the back. I never forget, we went to Fulham and had 500 passes apparently, got beat 3-0, and I just didn't understand that. Whereas in games before, we'd have 200 passes and win. So, and I suffered in that. I didn't play a lot in the second half of the season. And we had a lot of points, I think, leading to Christmas, which we should have, on form, we should have stayed up. So that back in the season was a real regret for me. And speaking about Vaughan, and another thing for me, Charlie Adam got a massive, massive deal off the back of that. And he was a great player, star of the team. But without Vaughan, I'm telling you, he wouldn't have got half the work he did, because Vaughan just used to get the ball back in. We've seen it at Crewe, haven't we? So technically gifted, but he used to win the ball back, give it Charlie, and Charlie would do the special ball. So, and I'm sure if you spoke to Charlie, they'd say the same. Vaughan was so highly regarded within our squad.
I think you probably hit on something there. I think Vaughan is probably one of the ones that people do tend to overlook. You know, we talk about these great crew sides. He was always there. He was in that these good crew sides, and he's maybe just quietly going on his business while Kenny's getting the assists, Dean's scoring the goals. But Vaughan's always there. I think you've hit on something.
I just don't think Vaughan had a weakness, really. Maybe his size, but he was so strong, honestly. His core and his keeping the ball close to his body. And he had that. He used to keep the ball on the outside of his foot. I remember thinking in training once, he's having it today. And he just turned the other way. He just had that like radar. You say he used to go left and right. And I was absolutely delighted when he got that move to Sunderland, because if I'm being honest, out of all the players at Blackpool that year, he deserved it. So, yeah, I was pleased that he went on and progressed.
I just want to ask about the winner at Anfield.
Yeah, that was a special day. That was close to my birthday, to be fair. So I had a lot of family up again. I tell you, I'll never forget it, because that morning, this is another thing. We talk about Blackpool out. It's so unorthodox, some of the stuff that we used to do. Marlon Harewood got on the coach and said, lads, I'm nipping. He got on about half hour early. Lads, I'm nipping to get some breakfast. Do you want to? I said, where are you going? He said, McDonald's. I said, can't have McDonald's. We're going to play at Anfield in a few hours. I said, go on then, get me a sausage and egg McMuffin. So we all had sausage and egg McMuffins on the way. And I'll never forget, I was burping egg all warm up, thinking, what am I doing here? And it was unbelievable. One of my, a game where Charlie had the radar on again, zinging balls in. I think I'd won the penalty just before as well, cut inside. Gave Graham Johnson a bit of a torrid that day, to be fair, if I remember. And everything just felt right. I just felt full of confidence, won the penalty, scored that. Obviously got the goal, and maybe should have had another couple of goals. And I look back at the highlights of that game. To do it on such a stage is was massive. And yeah, I'll never forget it. And I went out for a meal in Liverpool that night, and a lot of my friends and family come. I got Stevie's shirt, Gerard's shirt. Ryan Lowe actually sorted that out for me, because he's quite close friends. And I remember Ian going mad, doing this cackle in the gantry, you know, where the Liverpool badges that they all touched. We were all stood there trying to grab shirts. And he's like, get in that effing dressing room now. And I'm like, what's up with you? You're acting like it's a circus trying to get shirts. What do you think? You're not going to play these lot again? I'm thinking, no, probably not. We might end up going down. So I'm going to take the opportunity to get it. So I got shoved in the dressing room thinking I've lost it. I can't believe it. So I came out of the dressing room and Joe Cole was there. And I was absolutely bothering myself. I said, Joe, do you mind? Stevie said I could have his shirt. So fair play, he went in and got it for me. So I walked out proud as punch after that. So
I think it's a good opportunity here to talk about, do you know, on your Wikipedia, Luke, do you know you've got a controversies section?
About, is it the diving bit, is it?
Yeah, and Ian Holloway is one of the ones that sort of, I think I've got a quote for you here. He said he got a booking for a complete waste of time of a dive and he was laughing about it, but he basically tried to get a penalty and that ain't funny. And then you also had Neil Redfern calling you a joke. And then apparently yeah. Gus Poyet also got upset with some diving. Is this something, what would you say about that if they were to sort of say that and you had the opportunity to talk about it?
The Holloway ones, again, this reflects it. Like we spoke about him being crackers. I think I'd tackled, is it Stephen Dobie? He was at Blackpool, wasn't he, I think? Remember him?
Yeah.
He broke on the halfway line. We were outnumbered. And I gave a cynical foul, to be honest, which Neil Warnock would have said is a great foul. You know what I mean? Take a book in. And being honest, we do that as professionals. It's well known. And then after, I think I attacked Delaney at pace and I tried to buy a foul, being honest. It'd be classed as cheating. I just tried to gain an advantage. And again, managers would say to me after games, you should have gone down there. Unfortunately, it's in the game. I'm not going to lie about it. Felt a bit bad after. Did actually put my hand up and said to him on the byline, which you're not having his luck, a barking alsatian at that point. He was absolutely screwing. And then 2 minutes later, I set the equaliser up for Steve Morrison, which I celebrated mildly about, as you can imagine. So then after the game, he ran up to me. Neil Warnock's come up to me, well done, son. I went to shake Ian's hand. He went nuts. And Neil Warnock gives you a wind-up. I knew exactly what I was doing. He literally went for me. And he just said to me, I taught you better than that. I brought you up better than that. And I thought, you had me 1 year at Blackpool. You ain't brought me up. Do you know what I mean? So, and then we got in the tunnel. He went for me again. And David Norris ended up breaking it up. I don't know. He was all handbags, really. But he was always art on his sleeve. And looking back there, yeah, it was probably something than that. And being honest, Neil Redfern, you can look at it as much as you want. Sam Byram, I played with him at Leeds. He knew what I did. I used to attack players at pace. He stuck his leg out and I went over it. If he hadn't stuck his leg out, I'd have ran past him. So we won the game. It was a penalty late on. I was playing for Blackburn at the time. And Gary Bowie said the same, well done. It was there. Sam stuck his leg out. You see a lot of them in this day and age. If I'm being honest now, if that was on VAR, it'd be given as a penalty end off. So no regrets for that one. I can't remember the Gus Poyet one, probably. I can remember what he was like on the touchline. So I'm not really bothered about going into that one. But after that game, I had a lot of Leeds fans sending pictures because I wasn't on social media, diving off their desks Monday morning, getting loads of stick. It was brilliant to see. But I've been back since and there was no real ill feeling. So I wouldn't say I was classed as a cheat. If there's two occasions in my whole career where I've been labelled as that, I'll take that.
Yeah, fair enough. It does seem a little bit harsh to have that as a controversy section where a couple of managers have said you've gone down a bit easy, but it is on there. I'm going to move on a few years now. So you're at Burton. That's your last club in the Championship. And then 2018, I think you're released from them and you dropped down to Cheltenham, who are in League Two. Was there no one in League One that you were after, or was Cheltenham the club that was that the club that appealed to you?
Not really. I think when I'd finished at Burton, I was in a bad place, not played a lot of football. And I spoke previously about that I always conducted myself properly every training session. And even at Burton, I did it day in, day out, and I was getting treated like rubbish. And then there was one session that I remember that we did a finishing session, which maybe a couple of balls I didn't quite get right, not for the lack of trying, just weren't quite right on the day. And I remember having a meeting after the season and Nigel said to me, you sort of tossed it off that session. And I thought, if you can pick that up out of my whole season where I've done everything right, and we weren't scoring a lot of goals and I was flying in training because I wasn't playing games, and even the lads were asking for me to play, we need him in, but he wasn't willing to budge on that. So for him to say that I dodged it in that session out of the whole season was a bit gutted by it, to be honest. And I actually said to him then, I was ready to retire, if I'm being honest, but I said, you won't be my last manager. So I left the meeting glad that I'd said that, because I've never been anyone that goes into managers' rooms asking why I'm not playing, because I'm brutally honest with myself, I'd know if there's a chance that I could be dropped. So I went away. Actually worked on myself a little bit. I did a lot of 10K runs, sort of hilly runs. I went to Wales and did a lot of hilly stuff, got really built myself up, but really struggled to get a team, if I'm being honest, with my age. Managers were telling me that I wanted men. Then it got to chairman level and there was just to take a 35, 36 year old that hadn't played a lot of football was obviously quite risky. So yeah, I was ready to stop, to be honest. But then my agent said, listen, I spoke to Michael Duff, who's down at Cheltenham. Do you fancy going down and playing in a trial game? And I thought to myself, I don't need to be playing in a trial game. Surely I've done enough to go to a League Two team. But he eventually convinced me, and obviously I played against Michael for years and we had some good tussles, and I thought he'd be quite relevant. He's new to the game. So I went down, walked in, actually no one there to meet me. And I went and sat in the toilet and I texted my wife and I'm thinking, should I just drive back? I don't know if I want to do this. I really don't. So literally I made that decision that I was just going to come back. I went to walk out of the changing room and then Michael Duff came out the canteen and obviously got hold of me. He said, listen, today you'll enjoy it. There's a few senior pros playing, blah, blah. We played the university team and I think I scored a couple of goals. And we finished that game and he said, I was taking you after 5 minutes because he just wanted to see if I was fit, basically. And after that game, I'd ran more than every player on the pitch and I was 35, 36. So that obviously showed them that I was absolutely good to go. So gave me a deal, not a lot of money. It wasn't about the money, just continuing playing. Cheltenham's a lovely place to live. I don't know if you've ever been down there. And they said they'd put me up, which was great as well. And if I'm being honest, probably, apart from Blackpool, the best 2 years of my career. If I'm being honest, I met some great people, real people. You know, at that level, they're not playing for, like we said, money. It's the paying to play the mortgage, basically. And I love that about people. I really got on well with them. Throughout your career, you've probably taken one player out each team, if that. Class them as colleagues. I've got six or seven that I speak to regularly at Cheltenham. And I was put into a leadership group and I really bought into it, gave a lot of responsibility within the squad and had a great year. I think scored 14 in that first year, which is a good return for an aging old goat. So, and Cheltenham's not a footballing town. It's known for the racing, the rugby at Gloucester. And we didn't have a great start. First 10 games, didn't have a great return. But then after that, the progress, the fans came and the clubs grew and grew and it's continued to do the same. So, I loved it.
I always thought it was weird that Cheltenham was the football town and Gloucester was the rugby town. You'd think it should be the other way around.
Exactly. And this is what shows it. Even though we were doing really well, I was scoring goals, I could walk through Cheltenham without anyone saying anything to me. Every club I've ever been at, you get stopped left, right and centre until probably after that first year. And then we knew then that we'd put it on the map, shall we say, a little bit. And it really picked up pace. Even the media team started working hard. We started advertising. We've got out in the community a lot more. And those are the things you need to do. And every side of the club sort of grew in stature. And obviously the results on the pitch help. I think even still, they got promoted without me. The year I left, obviously had a great year, got promoted. Or the CEO and everyone emailed me saying that I was a big part of them getting promoted. So that's great, you know. They didn't have to do that. They said I started it on the momentum it was. So I feel really proud to have been a part of that and kept in close contact with all of them, like I say.
Was there ever a chance of you coming back to Crewe in the later stages of your career?
Yeah, I spoke to Graham McGarry about this. I'm absolutely a bit... This is why I'm bitter. I spoke to Kenny Lunt, actually, and said, can I come up? And he said, we've got no money. And I said, I don't want a lot of money. And he sort of gave me the cold shoulder, which I had him about actually at the Burton game. And then ended up going Burton. The Cheltenham were scoring the goals. So who knows? I would have come back to Crewe, being honest. I said to my wife, if it's an hour and a half travelling, I don't mind doing that, which Cheltenham was probably the same amount of distance. So I'd have come back to Crewe for sure. Unfortunately, it didn't come about, but... not too many ill feelings, but I let Kenny know last time I seen him.
That first season at Cheltenham, though, you did end up scoring at Gresty Road, didn't you? I think you and Billy Waters both got one that day.
Yeah. I speak to, obviously, Ben Garrett was the goalie that day. And I don't know if you remember, it was really hot. It was absolutely baking, end of March. And I don't know if we played midweek, but I just felt so tired that game. Some games, obviously, I don't have something to do with my age and the heat. And I'd ran quite far. I think Billy put me through and I'd ran quite a lot of distance and I just thought, I can't run anymore. So I just whacked it and I hit it so sweet and it flew in the far corner. And it took me 15 years to get back to Crewe. I was gagging to get back with all my teams, but that was the first time I got back. And obviously there was no celebration, but I'm so pleased I got to play back there again.
So I wasn't at that game. I was living down south at that time. So the first time I got to see you, because obviously, like I said, you left Crewe and we haven't been back to the Championship. You spent most of your career Championship Premier League. So the next year, when you're playing in the home game against Crewe, it's 1-1. Perry NG gets sent off that day. What I remember about you, and I don't know whether this is me remembering you in a fond light or anything, but I remember, because I was with my mum and dad, they'd come down to watch. And I said, Luke Varney's very aggressive these days, isn't he? He's got a bit of aggro about him. I don't remember this at Crewe. Is that me not seeing that because you're a Crewe player, or is that something that you've added to your game since you've left Crewe?
No, being honest, and you'll know this, some of the Crewe players in that team had an edge, which I loved. Perry did, Kirk did, and they were quite outspoken.
Greeny would have been playing as well that day.
Yeah, John Brayford will tell you the same if you ever get a chance to speak to him. He was desperate to kick Kirk in the air a few times, which I loved. I loved that edge. And I remember Kirk tackled me right by the byline. I think I got booked. And he got in the ear. And I just thought to myself, not that he should have some respect, but have a little bit of respect on the pitch, you know what I mean? And that, this is what I say, that game, I had a terrible game. I was rubbish because I was angry. That is not me at all. I missed the chance, actually. And that was me not having my ball on the game. I got sort of rolled into trying to get hold of them young lads. So fair play to them. And we know, do you know, Perry's obviously got that edge. That's why he's probably gone on to progress. He loved that little bit of rough and tumble, but he was a good Crewe player. So yeah, that day, that was a bit out of character for me.
And then you finish off your career back at Burton, sort of an ex-Crewe player placed John Brayford, yourself, Ben Garrett, all at Burton, as a player coach. We've talked about your PT company that you set up. What's the goal? Is this going to be you coaching people by yourself? Is it your way into coaching at a club? What's the goal?
Well, initially, I spoke to Jake Buxton, and we said that I'm not going to play every week by any means, especially in League One. But let's see how we go. And initially, I felt really good, felt strong, trained, could keep up, had a really good pre-season, to be fair. And I thought I could sort of see myself doing well, but started to get a few hamstring issues. And then Bucko said, listen, Jake was really struggling at the time. We were losing a lot of games. And Chris Beardley was the fitness coach. And he said, listen, I need Beardo closer to me. Do you mind doing the role? So literally the fitness stuff, I thought, listen, I've always been keen on doing that. So yeah, listen, I'll take it. So I took it on board. Obviously, we're at St. George's, got great facilities. The logistics weren't great because we're having to fill the van up and take it to different pitches, different days. I'd have liked to have my own base to really concentrate on it. But yeah, I took that on board and really enjoyed it. But then obviously Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank came in January, bought his own staff, and I understood. So I had to go back to being a player. And then knew sort of my days were numbered at Burton. But if I was willing to sort of really go for it, they might have kept me on because they ended up giving a student the job. But I didn't know if I wanted it. Going from being a professional footballer, doing the hours you do, but getting the pay you do, to doing the hours being staff is completely different than the travelling. I've been away from my family, like we've said, 18, 20 years nearly. So I wanted to set up at home. So I've done it. I converted my garage in lockdown. So yeah, I'm PTing from that, from five steps from my front door. So it's going really well. I've actually had some football teams now ask me, only local, if I go in and do conditioning sessions. I'm not coaching skills or anything. I'm doing the conditioning side because, like I say, my reason for it is being released, being small, and I hear of it now. Players getting released still because they're not athletes. It's nothing. It's not a lot to do with their football skills. It's because they're not physically ready. So if I can give a little bit of that back, I'll be absolutely delighted and help these my football conditioning side is from 10 to 20 year olds, and then I'm doing a PT side as well. So I've only started literally Wednesday, but I've took 70 sessions already. So I'm absolutely delighted with the outcome so far.
Superb. And then, I mean, we're recording this the week after Crew have travelled to Burton. Because I'm not based in the UK, I'm watching it on iFollow. I've got the commentary on and got to hear you stepping into Pete Morse's shoes at the weekend. So broadcasting, is that something you'd be interested in doing more? Or is it just the case it was Burton versus Crew and Radio Stoke-Astia?
No, definitely. I've actually spoke to Stephen Warnock. He's doing really well at Sky now. Obviously, I play with him at Burton and Leeds. He sort of told me which way I need to go. Michael Gray was at the game doing Talk Sport. So he said to me, you'd be great at it. He said, I've got the ability to take the piss out of myself, which can help sometimes. You know, I see a lot of these pundits that basically talk about what people want to hear on the radio. I've never done that. I'd rather be honest. And I think it's the best way. And I feel like when I've done it, people have said I've come across quite well. So, yeah, the only thing I did think about, I probably haven't got a face for telly, so radio might suit. So, but I enjoyed it. And I've actually had a message or an email off Radio Stoke about doing a bit more in the future. So, yeah, I'd be well up for doing a bit more of that sort of stuff. So, even it's been great to sort of advertise on both fronts, being a bit of punditry, still staying in football because I will miss it. I'd be lying to say that I'm ready to sort of put it all to the side and carry on with this. So if you can keep in touch with it, doing it a bit of punditry work, I'd be absolutely delighted.
Yeah, I mean, without complimenting you just because you're on, I genuinely thought you were very good. And what I brought up in our podcast actually last week is the fact that you said Burton have trained not just the first ball from long throws, but the second ball and the third ball. I think you said that maybe 5 minutes before long throw went in, Burton won the first one, they won the second one, and then John Brayford puts it in from the third time the ball drops. So it was genuinely nice to hear someone who was able to offer the insight into what was going on even before it happened.
Yeah, because we talk about we've spoke about Mick McCarthy and Neil Warnock. If a ball had got thrown into one of Mick McCarthy's boxes when we lost the first three headers, you'd be belting your ears. You'd hear about it. Do you know what I mean? That can't happen because a lot will happen with Bray. The ball ends up in your box. So I'm sure Dave Artell and Kenny Lunt would have told them the direct. They picked a strong team that day, Burton, and And if we're being honest on the outcome of the game, they were just too strong on the day. And if you've got a strong outfit like Burton are, we spoke about Graham, to give those throw-ins away is criminal, because you've got, you almost better giving corners away, because these throw-ins are coming in high and flat. Flat, not high. And it's just difficult to, and Shaughnessy was getting the run on Ports. And you're actually seeing the couple that Ports won, the ball just gets cleared straight away. But once Shaughnessy's making flick-ons, you've got no chance. So, yeah, it's good to see that. And being on the inside at Burton, I would know that Jimmy and Dino would say, let's win the first, the second. Because even if the first ball gets headed out, Dino or Jimmy would chuck a second ball in. So that they're practising that constantly. So, yeah, obviously I've been on both sides of it, so it's good to see.
When you retired, Luke, there was an article put on the BBC Sport website about your career. That must be pretty nice, you know. Not everybody gets an article on the BBC when they sort of retire from professional football.
Yeah, I've just recently got on. I've been on Instagram a couple of years, but I'm not very active. And the social media now, you have to sort of, people that retire now, I don't think enough said about it. And not that I expected anything said, but yeah, it was brilliant to see. And my brother sends me all of it. I don't actively look for it to see what if I've got any write-ups. I never did throughout my career. All the paper clippings I've got in my loft, which I think I'll eventually reflect on in a good few weeks, I never bought any of them. They were kept by family, which is good. But yeah, that BBC was... But I actually think I've given my little bit back as well, because if I was ever asked to re-interview, win, lose or draw, I'd always do it. I think it's the best way to be fair. And I was always honest with him with my opinions about certain managers and clubs I'd been at. So yeah, that was really good to see. And being honest, I'll probably read all of them I still feel like it's not settled down, even though I finished in May, June. I've had a lot to do. My daughter actually unfortunately broke a femur in July. So with me in the garden, so I've been looking after her, doing a lot of physio and stuff with her, getting her back to her best. And then this with our Christmas, and then my PT's kicked off. So I'm really looking forward to reflecting on it all, looking at all my cuttings and clippings and making scrapbooks, hopefully.
Although we've said, Luke, that your last club was Burton, didn't you play a couple of times for back at Corn again at the start of the season?
I don't know if I could class it as playing. I wasn't very good. But yeah, it was all right. I felt okay. And actually, pre-season, I scored in every game I played. And I thought, actually, I'll make this work. And I wanted one of my children to see me play, both my children, sorry, to see me play a lot longer. Because it was so local, it felt right. The romance was there, obviously, going back to where I started. But I went to a couple of games and things happened that I had a centre-half one game, copied me word for word, literally. And I just thought, at half-time, I thought he'd have a drink and have a break. But they came out second half, he did it again. And I just thought, what am I doing here? And there was one, the final straw, actually, we played a game in Nottingham on a Tuesday night. I'd left. It was my daughter's birthday. But that me, I was committed to it and said to my wife, listen, I'm going to go. So I'm in the team. I'm not just going to not play. And I ended up in the left-back position, trying to get the ball. Me chasing a crisp packet. Like you said, I used to run everywhere all over the pitch. But I was that annoyed. I ran into the left-back position and I threw the ball at the lad to give it him as a throw. And he turned his back on me and did it again. And I ended up throwing the ball at him quite hard. And I thought, that's it, I'm done. I'm just going to end up reacting. I don't want to do this. I don't want to be that aggressive player. And it just weren't professionally enough for me, unfortunately. But I'm glad I tried it, because if I hadn't, I would have maybe thought to myself, oh, I finished before I was actually finished. But yeah, it was the perfect time to stop for me.
I think I'm right in saying, though, that haven't they, Corn, got a stand named after you that was paid for by the sell-on fee from when you went from Crewe to Charlton?
Yeah, obviously.
That must be a bit weird to play. It's a bit like Jimmy Anderson playing at Old Trafford in front of the Jimmy Anderson stand, isn't it?
Yeah, and my kids aware of that when they sat in it watching me. Obviously, it was quite good. And yeah, they got £500,000 when I went to Charlton, which is obviously big money for a team like that in that league. And then I think they got another £25,000 when I went to Derby as another percentage of the sell-on. So yeah, it was always good. I didn't get charged, and my missus didn't get charged to go in for the game, which is quite good. So yeah, I still go down there quite regular. I'm hoping actually to do some more PT stuff on the pitch. So there's still pictures of me up there. Actually, there's a picture of me playing Stoke in one of the derbies going past Jerry Taggart. So it's nice to see my hair's a lot blonder and a lot more. But yeah, nice to go back, always is.
Yeah, the last pod we did with an ex-player last month was with Clayton Ince, who was the first person we spoke to who had gone to the World Cup. I think you're the first person we spoke to that's got a stand named after them. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure how they compute, you know, against each other, World Cup or a stand named after them. I'm not sure which one you'd rather.
Clayton Ince is the only goalie I've ever played with that's not allowed to kick the ball. He's left to throw it, didn't he? Speak about it all the time. I remember
Dario. We did bring that up, yeah.
If he ever kicked one, I'd hear Dario, what are you doing? It'd be straight over into the train line.
Luke, before you go, I've got to ask you about your nickname, Reg. I think at most every club you played at, were you known as Reg? And someone of my age, born in the 70s, I know exactly where that comes from. But were you aware of where Reg Varney came from and what all the fuss was about?
No, not initially. I think it was Holloway, I think, that started it, and it just stuck. And then obviously I asked my dad. My dad was called it at school as well, and his dad. So obviously I ended up watching a few series. It's a bit crude, isn't it? I can imagine back in that days it was brilliant, but...
Well, just to explain for anyone who doesn't know, it was a 1970s sitcom that was fairly politically incorrect called On the Buses, and Reg Varney starred in it, so yeah.
But I liked it. It was brilliant. I loved... you don't get many players throughout your career because players would say Reg and they don't know me, which is quite good. And on your social media, I went down as Reggie V, so I weren't getting hunted, which I thought was brilliant. And to have that name, even now around, even when I'm walking around calling people, call me Reg, and I love it. It's something that will stick. And if I was to have a son, I'm sure it might come along.
and do you really hate Butler?
Yes, exactly. That I actually watched one over Christmas. It was on over Christmas, a Christmas special. So yeah, it was. I enjoyed watching it. I might have to show the kids actually because they always say to me, "Why don't call you Reg?" I don't know if they're quite ready for it yet. They're 10 and 8, so I'll give them another couple of years.
Nice one.
I just wondered if you could give us any Dario or Bakes anecdotes.
It's really weird because I went in my garage earlier and I scored a hat trick in, I think it was at Chesterfield away.
Yeah, in the Football League trophy.
Yeah, they all signed my ball, which you do, you hand it round, and Bakes had put Starfinder on it. And I just thought that was brilliant. So every time I walked past him, he'd say it, Starfinder, and I'll never forget it as long as I live. And with Dario, I just remember he had a weird way of saying it. He'd be like, Varney, you know how he does it? It was so deep and scary. Because I was so young and new to it, he just had my attention like that. And those two bits will stick with me. And the one with Bakes, like I say, I go in and look at that ball all the time and you actually think, Bakes don't get the credit he deserves for plucking those plays he did out. Do you know what I mean? He was doing the miles, looking at those non-league games. So I nearly went and played for Bakes actually. That would have been a turnaround, but it didn't come to fruition. But yeah, those two bits sticked out for me.
So Luke, I'm going to let you go in a minute, but I believe you are making a return to Gresty Road shortly.
Yes, I'm taking part in a 100-mile bike race for charity. I've always looked for ways to keep fit, obviously once my career was over, and I've tried to find something as less impact as possible. Obviously, football is quite demanding, so I've really found a love for the bike and really enjoying my time on it. So I did a 100-mile one back in July, left from Melton in Leicestershire, but I seen one come up called the Cheshire Cat that left from the Morphlake Stadium. So I thought, what a great opportunity, and I've asked the lads that I bike with and they've all bought into it. So yeah, I'm really pleased that I'll be coming back.
And that's a charity, is it?
Yeah, I'm actually doing it for a charity called Cyclists Fighting Cancer. So this charity is, I'm sure, as a lot of people, obviously everyone's affected by cancer some way. The numbers are frightening in this day and age. So this charity helps young children that are actually living with cancer to regain their physical fitness, to improve mental health. The donations actually pay for specially designed bikes, trikes and tandems. So obviously you'd have someone that's probably a little bit more able to ride the front on a tandem. So it's a fantastic charity. I've not been involved that long, but they're sending me kit to wear in. It's actually with their sponsor labels on, and they're sending me posters, and I'm really proud to be given the chance to sort of to ride for them. So if all donations would be great. I've got a Just Giving page as well that I've set up. So, and as well, like that day, if the crew fans wanted to come down and wanted anything signing, I don't know if they've any got any of my old shirts or anything, a programme for the game the day before. I actually think they're away that day, but it's on the 27th of March, so it'd be great to see them all.
Excellent. So 27th of March, get yourself down, cheer on an ex-Alex legend. And then what we'll do, Luke, as well, we'll pop the charity page in our podcast description. So if you're listening to this, it will be in there for you to click and support Luke with his bike ride. Perfect. Luke, I think that's probably a good place to end this. So I just want to say thank you so much for your time and for coming on this evening.
No, enjoyed it any time. Like I say, I'm always willing to do it. I like the sound of my own voice, so I'll jump on any time.
Well, hopefully we'll hear you a bit more on Radio Stoke. It sounds like that's a possibility.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Definitely, I'll get back to them. And I've said to them, let me know what games you'd like me to cover. And now, as long as it's not coinciding with the business ideas, then I'll jump on it.
Excellent. Tim and Dave, thank you so much as well.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening. Until next time, goodbye. Bomb a bomb a bomb 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 bomb